We still have pending packet of amendments that we've handed out. First one's by Representative Phillips.
Oh, man, too early.
Representative Phillips is not going to offer this.
Oh, yes, I'm going to offer it. I just don't have my energy level up.
That's a personal problem.
I think it's a collective problem.
You want me to move it?
The committee's collective energy.
Yeah.
Amendment number one. First amendment by Representative Phillips.
Chairman, I move amendment number one, which is in the category of cuts across the all departments category.
Chairman.
All of you. Okay, this is the underfunding and the vacancy rate already. Of this would be is just increase the underfunding and force them to hold positions open longer or keep them vacant all year.
Lay off additional people to be able to pay for what they've got.
Right. Do you want to do this, Randy, you want to spread this according to the general funds that are in each department?
Yes.
So that it'd be a sharing in each department of whatever. Okay.
This is
Representative Brown.
This is all general funds or all funds?
General funds. Wait a minute, excuse me.
This is all funds.
Yeah, all funds, excuse me.
And Mr. Chairman, of that?
Of that would be 64% of it would be general funds.
Okay. Further discussion. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Phillips.
Yes.
Representative Sharp.
Yes.
Representative Ulmer.
No.
Representative Boyer.
No.
Representative Brown.
No.
No. Amendment number two by Representative Barnes will hold. Next amendment will hold also.
Mr. Chairman, I was serious about amendment number one. It was the place, not the show.
What's that?
For the record, amendment number one was the place, not the show. So I really am determined to see this thing come through.
The place?
Yes. In other words, make it, you know, for real.
I just like to have a little better understanding.
What's that?
Just to put people on the record, those of us who, in your opinion, are not serious and those who are, is that?
No, Mr. Chairman. I'm not referring to this committee as a whole.
Or anybody individually here on this committee.
Number three and the backup labeled number four is a formula program. Number five, or the next one is also by Representative Jackal.
It's the same one.
Yeah. Number six, Russell Creek Hatchery, we held for more information by the department. I don't see anyone here from the department. And, okay, we can go back to number two. Representative Barnes, one that we held open was the $3.6 million reduction in travel.
Mr. Chairman, we're replacing the travel amendment with a new amendment being distributed. Mr. Chairman, the amendment has already been moved. Is that not true? Did I not move the amendment already? We were just holding it in
the other amendment we held, and if you're withdrawing it, replacing it with this amendment, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, you could move the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I move the amendment. I believe this is the amendment that has been worked on to make it better conform so the analysts could work with it. And I'm told that this takes general fund appropriations down between $500,000 and $1 million.
Are there objections?
Questions, just.
Representative Boyer.
So the effect is we're just kind of making a blind guess at this point, and they'll make the adjustments and then we'll be able to see them.
That's true.
Mike, or someone.
Mr. Chairman, the record, Mike Graney, Legislative Finance, and Nancy Slagle, Legislative Finance. Just some additional information for the amendment. We did some rough analysis just to show where the travel reductions are at this point, and to try to get an estimate about how much is available left to take by reducing it down to FY92 authorized. And our rough estimate would be it would probably be in the neighborhood of about $1 million, maybe less than that. If you have any questions, for example, looking at this sheet that we're passing out, for example, the governor's office, that would read that they're below FY92 authorized by $5,800. The positive number shows how much each department is above the FY92 authorized. The notes try to indicate that how much of that would be in part or substantially non-general fund amounts. For example, I think a good one there would be, let's go down to environmental conservation. They're about $1 million over FY92 authorized in travel, and a good portion of that amount over would reflect program receipts and the 470 fund.
Also, on public safety, I don't have it on here, but the increase in travel on that is mostly due to an FY92 increment that was put into the 800 line item, and then this year they distributed it. It was basically for training funds. And that was $235,000 that was put into the travel line. So that's not really an increase over 92. It was in the 92 authorized, but in the in incorrect line item.
Mr. Chairman, is there any way that we know of that we can keep reallocations from occurring which draw from line functions to fund travel? There's no way to do that that I'm aware of. The intent isn't clearly strong enough. But I would hate for us, and I don't necessarily oppose this, but I would hate for it to result in line functions being diminished because a commissioner decides to make an assessment or those types of things that would occur after after the budget is put to bed and been signed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boyer, I can think of no way of preventing that, given the executive branch's ability to do line item transfers through their internal RP process.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that if we continue having this problem with the departments transferring money around as they see fit, I think we should send them a strong message that we'll reduce their budget elsewhere the next time we get a hold of it to compensate for it. Because the departments really should not be writing the budget. And that is a legislative function. And if they continue to do that, we need to find some way, even if we have to take their commissioner out of the budget. That can be done, you know.
I was just going to say that the reduction we made, for instance, across the various departments that had paid their assessment for funding the media center really troubled me, because it doesn't mean that the media center doesn't get funded. It meant that there were less dollars available in those departments. For instance, the FYS or others where we took it, it's just less money for those line functions in those departments now. It doesn't mean that the media center isn't funded. And I guess a more important dialogue would have been to talk with the governor's office and say, let's discuss that as a budgeted item and decide whether or not we agree with that or fund it at some appropriate or less full level, but not to have taken it out of those departments. So that frustrated me. I went along with it because I think the message is an important one to send, but that's the wrong way to send it. The way we did it is the wrong way to send the message, because it means less money for those line functions. Now, and this is just a good example of where the administration has made an assessment. The departments took it from line functions in some cases, not all, but in some cases line functions, to do something they wanted to do, and I think that I disagreed with that, and so this, I think, can happen the same way, and it's difficult to send messages.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't mean this to be a message. I mean for them to stay within their travel budget, and I think that OMB would have to approve them changing from a line item to go over to travel. And since we have the director of OMB sitting here knowing our thoughts on the subject, perhaps he will not allow it to happen.
Yes, a couple of things. One of which is that in some cases we've approved a line item that may be at or above the FY92 level, which seems rather silly on the one hand to approve it and then on the other hand to take a decrement from it. However, I don't know how to approach that. And then I noticed the paper we were handed out on the comparison for travel comparison, that some of these are federal, and including general fund match, federal funds, hazard response funds, program receipts. So I would move that after the word general fund appropriations, putting in the words exclusive of federal fund, general fund program receipts, general fund match, and budgeted 470 funds, so that there wouldn't be this transfer, this further hit into federal funds and funds that had been built in, because it seems pointless to get program receipts and not spend them for the purpose that they were gotten for. The same thing applies to federal funds and other things.
Mr.
In other words, I'd like to see a little more entrepreneurial approach by the agencies to make the feds eat their share and other use of the funds.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment is clear on its face. It says not to exceed their FY92 general fund appropriation. The extra language is extraneous.
Well, I found that all of these sometimes has to be told things three times.
I guess I'd ask our analysts if this amendment is written clear enough the way that it's written currently.
Mr. Chairman, if it means that no department is supposed to exceed FY92, it's clear. I just want everyone to understand that this may undo specific increments, decrements, actions that have been previously taken by this committee, which, in the time allowed between now and the bill, that we probably wouldn't know specifically what those impacts would be. But in terms of the dollars, it's clear.
Just general fund.
Right.
Representative Ullman.
One further question on the clarification. I assume it does not include program receipts. Is that correct?
It doesn't say program receipts. It says general fund, and you have to give.
But I just wanted to clarify that on the record, because sometimes general fund program receipts are considered general funds, and sometimes they're not. Like in this whole exercise, we've been talking about trying to reduce general funds. We haven't been trying to reduce program receipts. And so if it's clear to the administration, if it's clear to our analysts that we're not including program receipts, then I feel that I could support the amendment. But I don't know if that's totally clear on the face of this amendment, and I'd like to make sure that that's how you're interpreting it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ullman, thank you for bringing up that clarification, reminding everybody there's actually four general fund sources that in effect roll up into the generic general fund. There's the straight general fund that we all think of, the unrestricted general fund. There's the general fund match that's specifically identified to match typically federal receipts. There is then the general fund program receipts. Then the fourth one is the mental health, the general fund mental health trust monies. Now it would be the intention of this motion that we would just be touching the straight general fund?
Yes, the first kind.
Representative Barnes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we have given specific authority in some cases for the use of program receipts, and so that is the reason why that I thought we were talking about straight general fund dollars, and I thought that was the way my motion was understood.
That clarification would help, Mr. Chairman.
So should we say unrestricted general fund?
Yes.
Okay, so we should say unrestricted general fund in both places. Unrestricted general fund appropriations, blah, 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 not exceed their FY92, unrestricted general fund appropriation. That's a friendly amendment that I would offer to Representative Barnes.
Representative Barnes, is that acceptable?
Certainly.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your opinion, on the list FY92 authorized totals by department, do you know of any one item in there that does not have enough pure unrestricted general funds in there to accommodate the differences of cuts shown there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sharp, I would hope that our instructions would be that we would only be reducing general fund was there. In other words, that we wouldn't be asked to reduce money that wasn't left to take. In other words, if the committee's action had already got it, let me just use for example. Let's say in part of administration, if that $117,000.8, if none of that was general fund, we wouldn't reduce it.
Let me rephrase that. How about in administration, $983,100, if there's not $117,800 of pure general funds in that total, then that $117,000 would be reduced. That's the way we're reading this now, right? We're assuming that there, out of the administration's total travel of $983,000, or $1,109,000, that there should be at least $1 million or $117,800 of pure general funds.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sharp, there may or may not be general fund. For example, the The House action to date is has the travel at $1,100,900. The authorized was 983.1, the difference being the 117.8. Of the 117.8, we would reduce that portion that was pure general fund. If, for example, there was no pure general fund in that in the difference amount, then it wouldn't be reduced. If the amount, say, was $100,000, that's the amount that would be reduced.
Yeah, I'm fairly confident with the figures we're looking at here that probably there's enough general funds in those totals to accommodate.
Mr. Chairman. I'll call for the question.
Thank you. I just need some clarification. We have already taken action in several of the agencies, and what we're doing now, is that in place of action that we've formally taken, in addition to action that we've formally taken, or some combination of the two as it relates to those departments that are over and those departments that are under? In other words, if this motion passes, where are we going to be at?
What? These reductions would be in addition to the reductions that you've already taken. These would be additional reductions. Mr. Chairman, one area, if I can jump in here a second, Nancy just pointed out, too, there could be a little bit of a problem related to the unallocated reductions. Do you want to talk to that, Nancy?
Well, it's in natural resources and corrections, the committee has already taken unallocated reductions, leaving it up to the agencies to decide how they're going to take those reductions. It's going to be very difficult for us to determine whether we should go ahead and take additional reductions on top of that, assuming that they're going to take that from other line items or if they're going to take that fully and travel. We will need some guidance on that area.
We don't want to have to make that decision, Mr. Chairman. Committee.
Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, in regards to the point raised by Representative Larson, second sentence in the amendment reads, any component in which the travel budget is already below the FY92 general fund appropriation is to remain at the lower level.
Sure. That's my concern, Mr. Chairman. To be consistent, should we move that we rescind all of our previous action and just adopt this?
Or? I don't think so. I think because the way this amendment is written allows those appropriations that are FY92 level or lower that the committee has done to stay at that level, and this then would take care of the rest of the departments that we have made no reductions to the FY92 level in travel.
Representative Ullman.
Very briefly, with regard to corrections, the subcommittee specified the portion of the efficiency reduction which should be attributed to travel in our backup notes. So there is a specific amount for us. I don't know about the unallocated reduction for DNR.
Yeah.
And with regard to the sheet in front of us, it appears that this motion will impact the Department of Law, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, those three for a total of about $450,000, and then perhaps some portion of the Department of Health, maybe not, and some portion of Natural Resources, maybe not, maybe even some of DEC. Is that right? Am I reading this correctly? And that the other ones, all of those that are either showing federal funds, other funding sources, or a minus number are not impacted by this motion. Is that right?
In some areas, such as the Department of Law, only approximately 50% of that is general funds. There's interagency and program receipts in there also. So those, there may be some other funding sources in these other areas.
Okay.
Well, to the extent that, for instance, in DNR, I'm generally uncomfortable with leaving it unallocated as it is. So to the extent that you can take unrestricted general fund reductions in travel that are above 92, that just would reduce the unallocated reduction. Is that correct? If we told you to take it in those areas where you have unrestricted general fund growth in the travel lines, go ahead and back those down to 92, then we have a smaller unallocated.
If that's how you would like us to deal with it.
I think that's how, in DNR, I'd like to have it dealt with.
Well, then, the agencies that have an unallocated reduction, of course, would go first to the travel line that is above FY92.
Right.
For that unallocated reduction.
Right. So we can just do it here and consciously know that.
Estimate about how much it we're getting here.
Mr. Chair, I could, try to figure an estimate of the additional time. I guess what I need to ask is, you know, what's your schedule for when would you like to have the bill out of here? And I could tell you how, whether I'm going to help or hurt that.
Okay. Well, I plan to do is be finished with this bill by this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I would, how long will it take you at that point to have the bill ready?
Mr. Chairman, generally when after you pass the bill out in its final form, we would usually like to have about a half a day in order to do all the make sure everything's there, everything's included. This time it's going to be a little bit more complicated since we're going to have to split everything out into two bills, one for the formula and non-formula. This will, you know, add some time to that. Now, I also understand that you still need to to review the substance legislation, and if there's any changes to that, you need to come back into the budgets to look at that. Wow.
Well, we're going to have to accommodate your timeline, and I don't know how much that delays us getting the bill to the floor, but
I'm hoping it wouldn't be more than a half a day to a day, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
As far as I can tell, the impact to commerce is going to be in the neighborhood of $80,000 that we have expressly accepted that making a case for Alaska increment. We've debated it on a couple of occasions. Y'all will recall this is the one the commissioner is very interested in keeping in the budget. If this amendment is adopted, I believe it will essentially negate the effect of that increment that we were trying to provide there. So, for your information.
Senator Barnes?
Well, I don't believe it will. Or we have specifically taken action. I don't believe it will.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could get clarification, I had understood that had been dropped from the motion to make this a more manageable amendment. This amendment, as it's written now, doesn't mention any actions we expressly took. And I can see the difficulty in trying to apply that as a across-the-board matter. I'm just bringing one specific one I'm familiar with to the committee's attention.
Representative Barnes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, anybody that looks at this travel budget, and I don't care who it is, has to recognize that we are spending an awful lot of money on state travel that we ought to be able to get a better handle on. And all you have to do is look at FY92 authorized to see the difference between what we've got in this budget and that budget, and it's rather appalling. Unless we're willing to take some of these reductions, we're never going to get the budget down to anywhere near our target figure.
Is it easier if we took an unallocated travel reduction of a certain amount and just spread it across all of the budget components that have travel line item in them?
I think that would probably be more difficult. I think you'd be going in the other direction there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Motion is to accept Representative Barnes' motion with all the caveats that we put on it. Is there objection? Without objection, it's accepted.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Barnes, next amendment. Nope. Yeah, Representative Barnes.
I'm working my way toward it.
It's the admin.
I believe we decided we would withdraw this one, or the commissioner was coming back, or something. I don't remember anymore. It was so long ago.
I think we're going to withdraw it because this is a transfer in. Multiple.
Yeah, it was withdrawn.
Okay.
Which number?
Gone.
Two.
Next one is a formula program.
We were holding this till we got the formula. I got it.
The following one has already been taken care of. The legal services for Unalaska.
Which one?
Unalaska Legal Services.
What number in this package are you talking about?
Well, it's the, the next one that we're going to deal with is the Russell Creek Hatchery. And what I wanted to do is ask the Fish and Game whether this hatchery could be operated for less, and I don't see anyone here from the department.
Russell Creek. Question is, who is Russell?
So. So I'm going to hold it until I can get an answer back from them. The next one is by Representative Larson. Decreased the ledge audit reduction by $100,000.
We just
withdrew. We voted on that.
No, we didn't. We talked about it.
What's that, Ron?
We didn't vote on it. I just didn't offer it.
Okay. Final one is the fee increase, and there's some backup. Actually, it might not be the final. Yeah, it's the final one. There's some backup in your packets that shows the cost for the different planes, a comparison on other airports, and then the expenditures by the department for airport maintenance, including all of the airports.
Again, I'll raise my objections to this. Last year, the fees were raised and approximately by $2 million, and we have to remember that the rural airports are the only type of transportations we have to and from the villages and to and from towns where we're not connected by roads, and I don't think this is very fair. I really don't.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could somebody explain a little bit about what's attached, either DOT or your staff or somebody?
About what?
About the material that's attached. It's not real obvious what these numbers mean.
Well, the expenditures is all wrong.
Let's see, the first attachment are just those certificated airports that was requested at the committee. Those are all the airports at which fees apply, the type of landing fee that we're talking about. The asterisk by McGrath, because I believe that currently that's set to be decertified. There had been a question, the fees apply to those aircraft above 6,000 pounds, so the next page in this package is just I believe Representative Sharp had asked for a listing of general aircraft just to see where the break at 6,000 pounds were. The next page was just a comparison of what's charged
for these landing fees at Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Kenai, Anchorage, Fairbanks. There on the bottom is something that doesn't directly apply to this question. Those were tie-down fee questions. So that's just showing the current rates at other airports. The last page, which is probably the one that raised the question, we had been asked sort of what is the amount of money coming from the general fund to support rural airports. So airport maintenance and operations in fiscal 91 was about $15.8 million. Airport leasing activities were 1.3. So we said on just fairly direct activities, we spent $17.1 million. Of that, about $600,000 is reimbursed for places where we have special maintenance for the Air Force. Airport leasing fees and landing fees adjusted upward for the $2 million increased fees that's in place now. So that's the $2.3 million for leasing, landing fees of about $1.3 for total revenues, so $4.2. I'd say those are direct airport-specific revenues is how I characterize those. And so if that's just a simple subtraction, that 4.2 from the 17.1 just says, if you exclude fuel taxes totally, there's about $12.9 million coming from other sources, or about 75%. We don't have a very good estimate or a way of determining how much fuel is used for rural airport travel versus between Anchorage and Fairbanks or flights to the U.S. So we just said if it was 40% based on the revenue numbers we received for fiscal 91 after all rebates, all refunds and everything else, that would be about $2.2 million, which would bring you to 62%. If you said just offset with all fuel revenue from aircraft operations, you'd end up at 43%. The increased landing fee, we'd been requested to just show that, and basically that $650,000 is about another 3.8%. So in other words, at whatever point you want to make your comparison, if you're saying 43%, including all fuel, and you had another increase in the fee system, you'd basically change that 43.3 down to 39 point something percent. And then the question had been raised about what Marine Highways' comparative numbers were. Marine Highways, as I understand the House budget right now, is about 41% from the general fund. But that includes the administrative costs for Marine Highways. In other words, the director, the accounting, the reservations, all those things. So if you just say that there would be some equivalent of those for rural airport system, I didn't try and go back and calculate those. I just said if you excluded the administration and the support services out of the Marine Highways budget, it would bring them down to about a 38 to 39% revenue from some other source.
Representative Phillips.
I want to get back to your second to last page on the very bottom, Burchard Airstrip, Merrill Field. You have Lakewood in here included in that?
No, I don't have Lakewood in here.
Yeah, I think it's, and you said it's indirectly, but what do you mean by that? I mean, is this going to go up?
Chairman, Representative Phillips, the bottom piece of this is just basically a piece of information that had been faxed over earlier when the question of not maintaining Birchwood in the winter had been raised and saying if you increase fees for tie-downs instead, how much revenue could be generated. So that's just...
Okay, are we increasing those fees then? This is awful cheap, $20 a month for a plane to park, winter service and all that?
Yeah. That's it. The action that we took yesterday.
I know. I know we did on the amendment, but I think we ought to revisit this question again for Birchwood, Merrill Field, and Lakewood.
If I may, the department has looked at that and is continuing to look at it, not only at that airport, but at all airports. The reason that we first went with increased lease fees and increased aircraft
landing fees for major-sized aircraft was those are high-revenue, low-administrative activity. If you go to these tie-down fees, so you raise 20, Birchwood is one of the few that has tie-down fees. So if we're going to institute them at all the other airports, we'd have to set up a collection system, go through it. We're still looking at it, and probably something is going to need to be done to have a more equitable leveling of the total revenue into the system. But no budget action right now is causing us to...
I mean, we ought to do that in addition to this proposal for the landing fees. Get them all, not just a few.
How many airports does the state currently maintain?
Someplace in the area of 200. Many of them do not have a permanent employee at them. Some of them are maintained by a contract with the community. Some of them are just maintained on an intermittent basis.
And these are the ones that would be impacted by this increase, this list.
The fee increase, yes, would be at the 27, 26 airports indicated.
Representative Larson.
How are the landing fees collected at the rural airports?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the carriers are required to file certificated activity reports, and theirs are submitted monthly along with their payment. Also, as part of that, these 27 locations are places where we do have staff, and there's a cyclic basis of trying to, say, note the aircraft operation certain days and then compare that to the reports that are filed by the carriers. In other words, it's a reporting system from the carrier's main office that reports all their operations.
These are all commercial-type carriers, and it's not small private planes.
It would not be small private planes. There may be cases where you have a charter operator go through, something like that, and at that point, the airport employee is supposed to be notifying that person that this is an airport that has a landing fee and you're not one of our normal customers, and to set up a billing with them. But most of the activity is the same air carrier operating day after day.
Further discussion. Representative Brown.
Thank you. Do you know the comparable numbers for general fund support of roads?
Roads, I think, about 75 million.
I guess that gets if you want to take a couple of minutes and talk about that, we can certainly talk about it. But we had a list of assumptions that we said if you included maintenance and operations, the direct, the same number that we have here for aviation, and you included the motor vehicle activities of public safety, the scale houses of commerce, the municipal road payments, the equivalent portion that goes out through Department of Community and Regional Affairs, that in 91 that would have totaled about $72.6 million. Fuel revenue in 91 was about $25 million. Licensing fees were $24.5 million, and other miscellaneous of about $1.4 million. So it was about $50.9 million of revenues versus $72.6 million of expenditures. So the calculation can be done. Clearly, the next question becomes, what about the troopers? What about all these other activities? But just using that as a block, I guess that would be...
Thank you.
It would be less than these.
About 33%.
Further discussion? Secretary, call the roll.
President Sharp.
Yes.
President Ballmer.
Yes.
President Boyer.
Yes.
President Barnes. President Brown.
No.
President Jacko.
No. No.
Yes.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative McCain.
No.
5-5.
Mr. Chairman, at some point in time, I mean, along with this amendment, we ought to consider those Lakewood, Merrill Field, and Birchwood airstrip tie downs. If there's any more airports or airstrips that I'm unaware of.
Mr. Chairman, I think Merrill Field is a municipal airport and wouldn't be subject to our jurisdiction on that.
Well, that's what I don't know about. But I think point is we got to review the whole thing. Yeah, I know about Merrill Field.
Okay, next thing we're going to take up is our formula program.
Now we're entering the twilight zone here.
And while we're still on this, I'd like to move to rescind yesterday's action decrementing the university an additional $756.1 million.
Okay, the motion is to rescind our action. Do you want to wait or do it right now? Move people out of the room. Motion is to rescind our action in accepting the decrement of 756.1. Okay, well, let's hold it for a few minutes and go on to the formula program.
Well, it's just, it was actually in this packet.
It was in this big packet, but we're not taking it up right now because we're waiting for other people. Okay, there's a handout that shows that we pulled all of the suggestions or tried to pull all of the suggestions out of the big sheets, and the other one that you should have is that handout that had the three scenarios. It might be buried under your table. Does everyone have this? No. That's it.
Okay. This is the last one.
Yeah, but it's the last one. Yeah. Must be a commentary. Just a commentary.
Pardon? Okay, we'll get the copy so people can.
Mr. Chairman, while you're getting copies, on this little sheet that we had, the actions taken to date, how do we reflect on this, our action, in regards to, say, the permanent fund hold harmless, or shifted it from general fund to the permanent fund itself? How would that be reflected on here?
Part of the formula.
Yeah. It's part of that 31.
It's part of
that 15 million is part of that 31.
Actually, it's 18 million.
But it is because it built the base, general fund base increase, so we just peak.
Back to order. Okay, on the formula programs. Does anybody have a suggestion that's acceptable to everybody yet? Representative Boyer.
Mr. Chairman, why don't we have some discussion from our minority members just as to tolerance levels, I guess. Because I think we need to take something here, and I'm I'm real interested in knowing how willing the minority is to make reductions. I just don't have a sense of what.
We want to be specific, and I'll be very specific back to you.
Yeah.
I'd like you to be specific.
Well, go down the list and say yes or no.
Okay, I move a 10% reduction in municipal assistance, school debt, and revenue sharing.
Jack.
10% in each and every one of them?
Yeah, 10% in each of them, yeah.
And we're not going to come back and have an amendment to increase one of them over the other?
Right. That total would be
in municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and school debt.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Larson.
Yes, I'm having a hard time here, and I'm trying to set a philosophy or a pattern here. School debt is something that the municipalities don't have a choice. It's something that's been bonded. It was bonded under legislation on creating a participation by the state and the local government. And they don't have any flexibility at all in regards to municipal assistance and revenue sharing. Those are aid programs to the local government, and I think more flexibility exists there. So I guess what I'm saying at this point is that I kind of support the motion in regards to municipal assistance and revenue sharing, but I really have hesitation in regards to school debt, and I'd like to see more discussion from other members.
Well, I agree with you. I was just thinking that the only way to get to the other ones is to take school debt along with it, because those people who either don't have school debt or want to go home.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess we get
about it.
I guess we get right down to the fact that we have incorporated, non-incorporated school districts. We almost have to, if we're going to take them as a package of municipal assistance, revenue sharing, school debt, we almost have to include the formula funding package in that too, if we're going to look at things and how they affect all school districts, not just a particular group of school districts, because these all affect only those organized municipalities, and of course therefore affects local government's ability, whether it be a city or a borough, to pay for the operation of their schools. So I think this motion goes farther than just these three things.
Okay, I'll withdraw the motion. I'll place a motion that we increase the foundation program by $22,357,000.6.
It's funded at $60,000
level. $60,000
level.
Is there objection? Without objection. We've added $22 million.
Now we have to find the 22 million.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Boyer,
I would then move that we make the 10% reduction across those three lines, and that just happens to be $21,250,000.
Which we should get a breakdown on exactly who we're taxing with the school debt retirement reduction.
There's 17 communities that have outstanding debt,
right?
And we'll the eight of them are rural. The rest of them are urban.
The amounts are disproportionate, though, Representative Boyer.
I will. I agree.
I will attempt to get that breakdown so that people can see exactly what we're doing. And you ought to know that. I think you ought to know if you're taxing one area of the state specifically, you ought to be aware of that when you do it. Is there objection?
Objection.
What's that? What do we, what's the objection to?
The motion was to reduce municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and school debt by 10%.
I object. And I'll tell you why, Mr. Chairman. Okay. school debt's a bullet that the local people can't dodge. They can dodge it on municipal assistance if they so desire to cut budgets, but the school debt has got to be paid, and it's an obligation, I think, a moral obligation that the state made when those when the law was passed and those schools were built. And the reduction of the reimbursement for school debt will not allow the local school districts the advantage of reducing that. It's got to be met, so that's my objection to that.
It's a
broad motion for all three.
It's a direct tax.
That's right.
Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Phillips.
No.
Representative Sharp.
No.
Representative Mulder.
Yes.
Representative Boyer.
No.
Representative Barnes.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Jackson.
No.
Representative Covenant.
No.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
Motion failed. Anybody have any other suggestions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Vaughn. I'll move that we reduce revenue sharing and municipal assistance by 10% and school debt by 5%.
Is there objection?
Object.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Vaughn.
When we had municipal assistance out here by itself, lowering it to a point that I felt was unfair, I felt it was a direct hit on my community. I couldn't support that. But when they're all, when we're taking a rated reduction among categories, I can better accept that because I'm wise enough, I believe, to know that we have got to get the budget down. And to get it down, I believe that each of the communities has to take a fair share.
Municipal assistance is a per capita share. While it hits Anchorage the most in terms of the dollar figure, it hits equally across all areas of the state, exactly equally, according to population.
Mr. Chairman, I would point out, because of the discussion that took place here when the motion was made for municipal assistance to stand alone and be cut to the amount of revenue sharing, that there was some fairly derogatory statements made about the community that I represent. And I would like to point out that Anchorage is the hub of the state transportation system. People come into Anchorage for medical assistance, for jobs, and for shopping. There is also probably a little known fact of the services that is provided by the community of Anchorage that people receive that come in to Anchorage. For example, Merrill Field, where a lot of people arrive from other parts of the state. Our police department receives over 1,500 calls a year for assistance to people that come in to Merrill Field on small aircraft. So I think it is fair to say that Anchorage provides a lot of service for a lot of people from other areas of the state. And I think it is real important that you bear that in mind whenever you're making derogatory statements about Anchorage don't provide this service or Anchorage doesn't provide that service, because Anchorage provides many services to a lot of people from other areas of the state.
Mr. Chairman, could we hear some of the comments of the or the concerns or interests of the people who have objections to the proposal by Representative Ulmer? I mean, I don't know where Representative Jackal is coming from. I know now where Representative Phillips is coming from or Representative Sharp.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I offered some amendments to reduce the budget, anticipating that this is going to happen, and my suggestions weren't taken. So I just feel that it's 10%. It's too much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Mel to read these statistics of people coming into Anchorage, because I think it's fair that you understand when things are being said about Anchorage not providing service. You understand? Would you read that?
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mel Croxing, Representative Barnes staff. We just got this information in from the municipality of Anchorage. Under Health and Human Services, 18% of the people served by of the homeless are from not from Anchorage. 10% of the people seen in the TB clinic are not from Anchorage. 6 to 10% of the folks seen in general health clinic are not from Anchorage. 10% of the folks seen in the sexually transmitted disease clinic are not from Anchorage. 33% of the folks treated in our detox centers are not from Anchorage. Additionally, the fire department medics take 1,500 to 2,000 calls per year for non-Anchorage residents. Now, with that said, Mr. Chairman, again, I expect Anchorage to take its fair share of the hits, but I do not expect that municipal assistance be trotted out by itself and that a ratable reduction be taken in the same or taken down to the level of municipal assistance, because, revenue sharing, because then it's clear on its face, because of the way the formula for municipal assistance is written, that it is Anchorage who takes the hardest hit because we have the largest population base. And at one point, we took a look at mental health services at our community mental health center, and about 40% of the people that we were treating was from other areas of the state. And these statistics are something that you can't argue, because they're in fact true.
Representative Barnes has made a strong argument for regionalization. The statistics she quotes are the result of the centralization of operations in state and other operations in Anchorage. The largest number of state employees are located in Anchorage. For years, the mental health services of the state were centralized at API. No wonder you have the people who are going to the regional center. I think it's a result of being a metropolitan center and of the accretion of state and other functions and federal functions there. It comes with the territory.
Mr. Chairman, we in Anchorage, and by the way, the statistics I was quoting on mental health had nothing to do with API. That was Community Mental Health Clinic. The statistics I quote, and it's not because we wish to deny anyone these services, just simply the statements were made in here that we didn't provide services. Of course we provide services with municipal assistance that we share and with the rest of the state. We recognize we're a hub, but you should recognize that too, and recognize that many people come into the Anchorage area for services for whatever reason, whether it's because the Alaska Native Hospital is there, or because that we have the university, or because whatever reason, we still have all these people coming in, and all I ask for in this committee is that the fairness doctrine be applied where it relates to the community I represent. And that's why I voted for the 10% across the board and municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and foundation formula, or not the foundation formula, school debt retirement. Although I recognize that school debt retirement does not affect me to the same proportion as the representative from the Matsu Borough and the representative from Kenai. But I can accept that, whereas if you look at municipal assistance and revenue sharing and say, well, we're going to lower municipal assistance to the revenue sharing level, I can't swallow hard and accept that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Larson.
Sure. Just a couple of things on the light side, I guess. Maybe we need it today. I said somewhere, sometime I was going to say it. Every time, at least myself and most other folks that go into Anchorage, we're always assessed a $10 parking fine fee anytime we want to do any shopping there. So they have a source of revenue that some of us don't have. But
shopping Eagle River, we don't have parking fees.
But I guess on the other hand, My concern remains with debt service, because there is no flexibility there. Those
areas that have been growing the fastest are the ones that are hit unduly here. And I was talking to a gentleman from Anchorage the other day, and he said that within the past couple of years, he had bought a piece of property in the Mat-Su and a home in Anchorage, and that he had paid more for his home and property in Anchorage than what he had paid for the property in Mat-Su. But yet his taxes in Mat-Su were about double what they are in Anchorage. And I didn't realize that proportion existed, but I'm just point that out to show you that here again, the areas that are taxed to the limit are the ones that are going to be hit again, because we don't have any tax cap in the Mat-Su.
Mr. Chairman, I have sent for a document that disproves what Representative Larson has said.
I didn't say it's true. I said that's what a gentleman from Anchorage
told me. Well, I said to disprove what you said. I'm not saying whether you said it or somebody else. Because our property tax is the highest in the state. And we have a document and statistics to prove that.
Tax burden, perhaps, is
we're not talking about the tax burden. We're talking about property tax. Because some communities around the state choose to have an income tax or a sales tax at the local level. It is the choice those communities made. My community chose to have a higher property tax.
Representative Barnes, I can tell you for the Kenai Peninsula this year, we're going to 11 mills just for the general property tax, not including the service areas. The result of the fact that this legislature has underfunded school debt a number of times in the past that we're going to have to pay, that we have had to pay out of the fund balance that the borough kept in reserve. We are, because of we've been at the cap in school contributions for school, we're going to go up to, a little over 11 mills this year, not including service areas. In addition to that, there's a 2% general sales tax for the borough, and most of the cities have three or more. Homer has probably the highest tax burden in the state.
Mr. Chairman, our property tax is 17 to 19 mills, so you ought to try that one on.
In certain areas, perhaps that's true.
It's all across Anchorage. Yeah. I'm sent for the document.
On property taxes, there's two things. There's the mill levy plus the assessment. And assessments are not necessarily consistent from one municipality to the other.
It's 18.37 in the North Slope.
Representative Jackal and then Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm objecting to this proposal to cut these three by 10% primarily because the revenue share is included in there. I don't believe that the revenue share can afford to take a 10% cut, or I don't think it could afford to take any cut. Then mention that there's no flexibility in school debt, there's no flexibility in revenue sharing either. There's no other alternate sources of revenue. In many instances, the revenue sharing in those communities is a very small amount that essentially keeps the local government going for what it represents in most cases is maybe one clerk that works part-time. Through the 80s, Mr. Chairman, we've been successful in rural Alaska, I guess, if you will, in establishing some very basic services like water and sewer, utilities. We have centralized electrical systems in some cases now. We have VPSO programs. There's some basic services that are in rural Alaska now, but they do need to be administered in some way, shape, or form. If you've got revenue sharing further than it's already been cut, there wouldn't be enough money to hire that one clerk to oversee these programs, and I think we'd end up with all these systems that we have in place failing completely. So it doesn't represent a whole lot of money for a lot of communities, but I think it's right on the brink of being able to keep those communities going in terms of having some sort of resemblance of government.
Representative Sharp.
I'll pass.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't like cutting revenue sharing or school debt either, personally. But I think we have to come back to where we are today, which is trying to find $90 million of formula programs to cut out of the budget. I mean, half of our state operating budget is now formula programs.
and that is the most rapidly growing part of our state budget. I mean, Shelby, maybe you can help me, or Cheryl, I'm trying to remember the exact numbers, but of the $140 million between FY92 and FY93, the governor's budget, 80% of that increase is in formula programs. Am I wrong?
My recollection is about $100 million.
Okay. So $100 million increase between FY92 and FY93 is in formula programs alone.
Plus the 22 we just did.
Plus the 22 we just did. So $122 million increase between FY92 and FY93 has nothing to do with state agencies. It has to do with formulas. And so I don't think it's possible for us to sit here and go through what we've just gone through in terms of cutting out whatever we've cut out, $90 million in state agencies, and feel good about it without reducing formulas, because that's what's driving the budget increase right now. We can't simply ignore the formulas. And so even though I don't want to cut these things, you know, the things that are driving the budget right now are the things that are population-driven. Longevity bonus, the school foundation formula, municipal assistance, revenue sharing, those are the things
Medicaid.
That are driving, and Medicaid, those
it's
are the things that are
list.
Driving this budget. And we've got to do something about it, folks. Even though we don't want to, we've got to. Either that, or we have to do something like completely get rid of the longevity bonus or change the funding source to the permanent fund dividend or something, because otherwise we haven't really made progress at doing what we're trying to do here.
The municipal assistance and revenue sharing are not driven up year to year by population increases.
They are if we'd fund them appropriately.
Right, but we haven't been funding them appropriately.
On.
School debt service is something that, because of House Bill 37, the action we took on that a couple of years ago, that is reduced significantly next year. Not this year, but next fiscal year. Representative Boyer.
I'd just make a comment to remind Representative Phillips, that the people, the only people we've taxed in this budget so far are Medicaid recipients, AFDC recipients, adult public assistant people, and those are people who are blind, who are disabled, aged. Okay, no, I mean, we've whacked them $85, cash payments, real money. Now, those are the only people we're taxing in this budget so far, and I supported the also the other reduction, you know, capping, I guess, in a sense, the longevity bonus, because it then begins to more broadly tax individuals in the state of Alaska. And the reductions that we're talking about here for municipal assistance and revenue sharing, again, are just one step at kind of broadening the taxing that effectively will go on if we pass this budget. But you made the comment earlier that you'd proposed some things in the operating budget for elimination, and because you hadn't gotten them, you felt you were obligated or compelled to make reductions here. But even if we'd taken, in the most liberal construction, the amendments we didn't take from you, we might have made additional reductions of $30 million. Well, $30 million, given what we've just done by adding money back in, still gets us to less than $100 million of overall reductions. And we still then are forced to look back on this formula area for some additional reductions. So just for a moment, let's assume we've gone through your exercise and taken in the most liberal construction your additional $30 million worth of cuts. Where the $100 million overall reduction, where will you find now on the formula side, where will you give in the formula discussion some area for reductions?
Mr. Chairman, it was approximately $52 million that I'd offered, plus the other amendments that were passed here for increments or for reductions. I voted against the increments.
Not all. I know my figures came out and they balanced out.
Well, Randy,
I
mean, give it.
I'm not going
to
argue.
Go to the next link then and say we're at $120 million with taking everything you offered. Now, for a moment.
If everybody paid taxes in this state, property sales or otherwise, and the unorganized areas not be dependent on the state treasury, I think this 10% would be equal, but I don't believe it's equal.
Well, as Representative Jackal just pointed out,
I have a lot of people in my area that are real disgusted with the unorganized areas not paying their freight. Until we get organized and start taxing some of these people and paying for their services, my people are not willing to go. And they're saying, don't tax me with a government I cannot afford. And that's where we're coming from. And the bottom line for my people in my area is to treat everybody equally and fair. And some of the things we see is unfair, and that's where I'm coming from.
Representative Barnes and Ann Copeland.
Well, Mr. Chairman, two things. First, Representative Ulmer said that we had cut $90 million approximately out of the state operating budget, and that, according to the paper we got this morning, simply is not true. We've cut out $58,406,100. So I don't want that left on the record, having people believe we cut $90 million out of the operating budget, when in fact we haven't cut $90 million, including the $31 million we've taken out of formulas. And for our records, I've asked Mel to contact our municipality so we can put it on the record exactly what it is Anchorage pays in property taxes. Would you read that, please, Mel?
The average mill rate for Anchorage is 17.73 mills for 1992. It will go up if the school district is successful in getting or asks for more money. Also, the property valuation,
$13 billion.
Property valuation for Anchorage for 1992 is $10,042,107,000. This is approximately a 20% increase, I believe, over last year. Property values assessments did go up this year, about 20%.
I suggest we do pay our fair share at the local level.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you. Our discussion is on a motion, the 10% for municipal assistance in revenue sharing and 5% for debt service.
That's the most.
Well, from the discussion we have had, municipal assistance hits the urban areas hard. Revenue sharing hits the rural areas hard. Debt service hits the areas in between hard that have been growing fastest, like Kenai and Mat-Su. And I guess what I'm going to say, it's hard to say, but if everyone's feeling some of the pain, maybe this is a motion we can support.
The total taxes for the Anchorage, downtown Anchorage, is 17.96. The general government portion is 166, and the city of Fairbanks, the total is 18.08, with the general government portion of the borough 4.13 and 4.97 for the city. Blaine Lake pays 23.75 property tax rates, and so on down the line. Kenai Gulfstream area, which I live in, 19.23.
And the difference is, Mr. Chairman, the property valuation. Our property is valued so much higher than all of this other property that is being talked about, and which makes our property taxes substantially higher.
Theoretically, it's all taxed at 100% valuation. What's your tax?
Okay, we're not
100% of the valuation.
How much do you pay there?
Could we vote on
$8,000.
We're not going to get there, guys. We're not going to reach agreement on who's taxed the most.
Mr. Chairman, can we just vote on my motion?
There is a motion, 10% municipal assistance, 10% revenue sharing, 5% school debt. There is objection. Secretary, call the roll.
Representative Phillips.
No.
Representative Sharp.
No.
Representative Ulmer.
Yes.
Representative Boyer.
Yes.
Representative Bard.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Jacko.
No.
Representative Kopanen.
Yes.
Representative Larson.
Yes.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
No.
7 yea, 4 nay.
Motion carries.
Five 5% school debt, is that the
correct?
You can change
what
your vote.
The total amount? Can we get the approximate?
I already did my reduction.
It was 10% municipal assistance, 10% revenue sharing, and 5% school debt.
Okay, and what was the, what's the grand total? Is it about $20 million there?
No, it's about $15 million.
15?
it was 21,250 at 10% across the board.
Right.
So half of 12, 4.
Okay, so it's about a $15 million reduction overall.
Which we already spent.
Yeah, not enough people pay for what we've just paid these schools by.
I know.
Yeah, but you know, the school one was just simply an underfunding estimate. I think. Was it intentionally funded at less than 60, or was the intent to fund it at 60?
It was an underfunding. It was just
So what's this funded at? 75%?
No, that's fully funded. 127.
Yeah, 80%. Fully funded is 80%.
Okay, let's, what other formulas do we have to deal with?
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, well, you got down the list. Well, we already dealt with the
longevity bonus we dealt with.
Oh, we're holding the, did we already do the senior citizens property tax exemption?
Yes.
Yes, we adopted 3.6
it. That's a statutory change. Huh?
We got left.
Did you do the Medicaid?
Representative Kopanen.
Municipal assistance is a payment based on per capita and therefore goes equally on the basis of population, and therefore each citizen is receiving an equal share of it. I would move that we fund municipal assistance out of the permanent fund in the income account. It's just a different way of getting your personal welfare subsidy against your local state government.
Maybe we ought to cut all the out of capital and coming in, right?
That is a motion.
Their objection.
Yes.
I would point out that it would decrease every individual's property tax possibly by that amount, or maybe even more.
Okay. Motion is
to take the municipal assistance payment out of the permanent fund income account. Okay. Since it is a per capita payment to the citizens of the state via their local government, it's the same thing as getting it in your dividend.
Secretary, call the roll.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Olson. I think that's a serious motion, and I think it's something that ought to be thought about, but frankly, I hadn't thought about it until this moment, and I'm not prepared to vote on it right now. I would like to at least have the opportunity to think about that a little bit, so could we hold it?
How about if you withdraw it and replace it? Okay.
We did number five.
Did we already roll on the fish tax receipt? That's what I was thinking. We didn't do Medicaid ratable. We accepted all of
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Brown.
Have we already rolled in the lower fish tax receipts?
Did we do public transportation?
I don't know if we've done it yet.
I move that we accept the $3,832,000 as estimated pass throughs for fish tax receipts, or the reduction of that amount in the projection.
Your objection? Just a revised estimate. Without objection, that's accepted.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to get to the PPEs?
Yes, we are.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion still pending on PCE.
What was it?
Take the federal offices out of PCE.
Okay, that's one of the options that we have in PCE, and this is on those programs. That's on the number one is.
Yeah, it is.
Increase the floor to 9.5 cents. Is there objection? Without objection, that's accepted. The next one is to Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, part of the difficulty in figuring out this program depends on where you start. And if you want to begin? Do you want to begin at continuation or at the governor's number? I mean, there's no point of reference has been adopted.
What is the point of?
Well, the governor's FY 93 number is 17029.7. That, by the way, is in your packet at tab B. There's additional information about PCE. At that level, you're underfunding the program by $3 million, roughly.
3.5.
Well, I'm basing my numbers on the ones that we received during the subcommittee process from the OEA, and that represents a 2% projection of growth. We're projecting continuation at roughly $20 million, expecting that builds in a 2% growth, and the expected amount to fully fund at 100, well, actually, it's at 95%. Would represent the maximum that could be paid out into the program. You'd need $20 million. The governor proposed $17 million. Mm-hmm. And these options then are in addition to whatever number you start at.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, might I'll just mention that the 1% increase from 8.5 to 9% represents, I think, it's
$1,400,000.
I was going to say how much per kilo, per.
Yes, according to Representative Brown, we're already underfunded $3 million, and because of the reductions that had already been made in PCE. And in the current year, the program took a 20% reduction from the governor's veto and is operating at the 80% funding level. And even with the reappropriation of fiscal year 91 funding, about $1 million, this program has undergone a significant decrease in funding. But what it does when you increase the floor to 9.5%,